Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of La Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Sue Hardy, joined as always by Derek Brissett. Derek, we have had the second weekend of the 2023 Men's Rugby World Cup. There have been some close games, some blowouts, and some upsets. Which game of the weekend was your favorite to watch?
Kenya versus South Africa in the Africa Sevens Championship. That was wild. Did you check that one out at all? I know that didn't answer your question.
I saw the final result. Yeah, incredible result for the Kenyan Sevens men's team to beat the Blitzbox of all.
Unreal.
Make it.
As a Canadian fan, super concerning.
It's all over.
Terrible. So the repechage tournament now has Great Britain and the freaking Blitzbox in it. But yeah, Kenya was incredible. They scored some unreal tries in that final game to capture the Africa's Cup and then win, you know, obviously qualify for the Olympics. Which, you know, I think in seeing this, like, I don't understand how world rugby watches what's happening in sevens, what's happening at the World Cup right now, and thinks like these world league things are a good idea. Like, I don't understand at all. Like, obviously for Kenya, like, right. So we've been talking about all of last year, we were talking about the new sevens format. Yeah. Right. And, you know, obviously following the Canadian men's team, because they were a bubble team all year from being eliminated from the main tour, right? And obviously they were able to defeat Kenya for the last spot in the main tour this year. So Canada's going to be on the main tour. And we said at the time, as excited as we were, that Canada's moving on. Canada's going to be on like the main tour next year as they prepare for their Olympic repechage run. Right, that it's disappointing that Kenya, like a great sevens nation, isn't going to be on the tour. So what's the first thing that Kenya does after getting knocked off the tour is they show up and they basically, I mean, South Africa obviously has a chance in the repechage tournament, but the first thing that Kenya does after being knocked off the sevens tour is like send the Blitzbox to the repechage tournament, where the Blitzbox have a very real chance of not being at the Olympics.
Yeah, that's right? True.
Because they can lose to Great Britain. They could lose to Canada because Canada beat the team that they lost to.
That's
they can lose to anybody.
Mathematically correct. Yeah.
It's like, you know, when you get to the one game eliminations, like anything can happen, right? And so it's like the first thing that Kenya does after being knocked off the tour is to show up at the Africa's Cup and nearly eliminate the Blitzbox from the Olympics. Like, we are.
It's
incredible. Thing. And then you're also watching World Cup games being like Uruguay. Showing France that, hey, you might want to bring some of the big boys the next time you play us. Mm-hmm. Keeping them to France not even registering a bonus point against Uruguay.
Exactly.
Right. And, you know, obviously Uruguay didn't get the win, but it shows like it's a big message to a lot of the tier one teams that it's like, there's probably still a gap between tier one and tier two, but you got to take tier two seriously or they're going to they could wreck your tournament.
Speaking of a tier two team wrecking a tier one nation's tournament, Australia and Fiji.
Obviously, that was another incredible game. Like Fiji is obviously a tier two nation. They're the eighth ranked team in the world right now, which is insanely high for a tier two nation.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're ahead of Australia, rightfully so, because they just beat
them. Yeah, of course.
And Argentina as well. Right. And I think a couple other. No. And Italy. They're ahead of Italy, which I still consider Italy a tier one nation. They play in the Six Nations. That makes them tier one.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's fair. Yeah. So they're ahead of. So they're ranked ahead of three tier one nations. And obviously they're playing incredibly well. But, you know, it's not just Fiji, though, too. It's like, as I said, like Uruguay played France extremely tight. That was a tough game for France.
Yeah.
They probably underestimated Uruguay, right? Chile hasn't got a win, but they're hanging around with teams. They're making teams work for those for the wins against them, right? It's like they played very well against Japan. They played well against Samoa as well. Portugal gave Wales a pretty good run this weekend too. I'm not sure what your thoughts about that game are.
I mean, I think, again, I think this the issue that is becoming, you know, not as prominent here as, say, in previous World Cups where some teams only got like 3 or 4 days turnaround. But
yeah,
I think it's also as well, regardless with a World Cup, with, you know, so many games being played in such proximity, you do have to rest players. You do have to, you know, injuries get picked up and stuff, as like Malcolm Marks can attest for South Africa. I think the only team that's been kind of I don't want to say disappointing because they have had some tough opposition, but it is Romania at this point. I mean,
Romania was terrible in the build up too, though, right? Like they were losing to, like you said, it's like they lost to the USA. Like they were, and I mean, no disrespect to USA, but it's like, yeah, they were losing to teams that couldn't qualify for the World Cup in their build up to the World Cup. Yeah. Like Romania has been struggling. But like, I think overall, like you can really, the gap between tier one and tier two, as far as like on-field talent, seems to really be
narrowing
a lot.
Yeah.
And watching this happen, knowing that World Rugby is trying, like the World League is going to be a thing, is just like, I don't understand how you can watch this tournament and be like, hey, let's knock down tier two nations instead of continuing to build them up. Because like Kenya just, I mean, even on the seven side, like Kenya just showed like what they can do. You think like World Rugby is like, how nervous do you think World Rugby is that there's the potential that, or the knowledge now that one of either Great Britain or South Africa, two of the most iconic rugby nations, one, at least one of them, isn't going to be at the Olympics?
Well, you say that, and I mean, obviously, you're correct. But I think, so something that came to light is that because Australia is hosting the next men's Rugby World Cup in 2027, but they've also recently hosted the women's FIFA World Cup.
Right.
As well as New Zealand as well. And the rumors that have been circulating is that because the women's edition has expanded from 24 countries in 2019 to 32 for this year, is that more games have been held. These have been the highest attended Women's World Cup, FIFA Women's World Cup games in history. And now Rugby Australia is looking at it and going, hang on, if there's this much interest in tier two nations and, you know, some of the mainstay nations that have been with us, you know, a while, such as Canada or the United States, aren't here, can we, for a lack of a better term, make more money if we expand the Men's World Cup? And that has been the contention, because the big thing has been like, oh, who's going to host the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup final in 2027? Because it's, you know, between Sydney, between Melbourne.
Yeah.
And it was going to be a lock for Sydney. Now it's not so certain, because organizers are saying we should expand this tournament to 24 teams. And, you know, similar thing that is probably going to happen with the Olympics is that, you know, you have all these nations vying for their inclusion at the Olympics and
make it bigger.
Rugby sevens is going to become an Olympic sport, which means more people than ever are going to be watching it. And people be saying like, oh, but I thought South Africa was, you know, a great rugby nation. Why aren't they included? Well, if that's the case, then surely we should expand that, which would also be the perfect irony of the Sevens series contracting to 12 teams only for the Olympics to then expand it back to 16.
Well, I mean, I think it's like it already is, because like I said, like literally, I mean, we've had a couple Olympic qualifying tournaments or regional Olympic qualifying tournaments around the world, but you already hit the irony of that. like literally like Kenya is a team that is being booted off the tour, or like because they lost the game to Canada, or they lost the final game to Canada, right? So they're being bumped from the tour, and they just showed up and may have knocked the Blitz box out of the Olympics.
Yeah, it's
right? It's like you can't. It's, you know, there's obviously the, you know, the phrase from here, like any given Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it's, you know, like there's a lot of things. It's like, yeah, Fiji just proved, it's like, yeah, they can not only hang with these tier one nations, but yeah, Australia, you didn't bring it this week. Right. And yeah, Fiji beat you. Or like, you know, obviously going back to 2015, it's like, yeah, like South Africa, like, hey, you didn't, it's like, yeah, Japan can beat you. It's,
yeah,
right. And Ireland, Japan, 2019, yeah, Ireland, Japan can beat you. Like, it's right. Or like, and even like you kind of look at the way that this kind of goes, it's like 2019 World Cup, Uruguay beat Fiji. Fiji can beat Australia. Like, it's there's parity that's growing. Which is why I think like watching this tournament right now, also watching what Kenya just did at the sevens, but it's like it boggles my mind that that World Rugby wants to do like that World League thing and like limit the amount of times that tier two nations are going to be playing tier one nations out. Like, even if you expand the World Cup, which I mean, there's a lot of reasons to do that for, but even if you expand the World Cup, I would still like to see tier two teams play tier one nations like during the
more than once every 4 years.
Yeah. More than once every 4 years. Cause it's fun. And like, yeah. You know, like, but like also like, especially like certain tier two teams like Fiji, Samoa, Georgia, Uruguay, like, cause they're proving that they can hang with it. Maybe like the deep cut tier two teams, like maybe out to where Canada is, maybe you got to build back up to playing a team like England or something, right? As opposed to, you know, going to get smacked by 80 points. But like, so maybe you got to build back up to that. But there's definitely like there's definitely tier two teams that are showing like that they can like even a team like Chile, first World Cup, they don't look out of place at the World Cup. It's like, sure they lost both their games, but they look like they belong in the World Cup. Like they don't look out of place at all. Like they're playing,
yeah, they're definitely scrapping really around.
Well. Yeah. And they're playing and, you know, very well. Like hopefully, yeah, I hope they get a win. Like that'd be cool, but yeah. Like, I don't remember who they have left. Who do they have left in saying that?
Their next opponent is England this Saturday.
I hope they beat England. Because that would be great.
And they conclude their pool by playing Argentina on the 30th of September. Ooh.
Oh, that would be an interesting one.
That'd be interesting, but at that point you're getting to the conclusion of the pool, and
yeah, I don't like
having two losses already. That doesn't put you in good
state. If Chile wins either one of those games, it would probably usurp the Japan beating South Africa as the biggest upset in rugby history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Either way, great tournament. I'm loving what's happening, and the tier two nations, I think, though, like they've been the most entertaining part of the tournament so far.
Well, we'll get back to the World Cup in a little bit. Let's bring it back to North America because we have some MLR news. And we'll obviously be starting in Toronto because it's the most important place in the world. And that is the first re-signing for the Arrows 2024 season has been announced. And it is none other than the Kiwi sensation, the Lionheart, the Boot himself, Sam Malcolm. He is returning once more for the Arrows. And, you know, his records show at the moment he has played in 45 games, 42 of which have been starts. He has scored 370 points, the most of any Arrows player, with being 83 conversions, 61 penalties, and 3 tries. In the press release, Sam Malcolm said, "My link to this club runs deep, and I'm looking forward to embracing the challenge in 2024 alongside exciting new additions and strong returning members." Also want to put out there that Sam's essentially brother-in-law is now also an Arrow. "Bill left big shoes to fill, and while it's important we respect and honor his legacy, at the same time we move forward and keep grounded as Bill would expect us to do. The pain from last season is a powerful motivator, and it's incumbent on us as a club to work together and respond." Yeah, and, you know, Sam did put out a heartfelt post on the passing of Bill, and unfortunately was unable to make it back to Toronto for the funeral. But yeah, obviously having a, for the lack of a better term, familial ties in the team definitely helped.
I think that was exactly what we said when we saw the trade that the Arrows traded for Te Renger Tia Waitokia. Right? Was like, once we found out that they traded for Waitokia, it was like, well, our initial reaction was like, well, that seems like a good sign for Malcolm returning.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not the only reason Malcolm re-signed, but like, obviously Malcolm is, you know, the star player on the Arrows, and you know, he's one of the captains. The leadership group is going to be changing, obviously, since Mike Shepherd retired, right? Mm-hmm. So he might, I mean, he's already a captain, but he might have, you know, a little bit of a bigger role within the captaincies and the group there because Shepherd has retired now. This is the, obviously, as you said, the first player that the Arrows have announced that's re-signed. Like, so far, all we know of is the guys that the Arrows have traded for, right? Mm-hmm. So the first re-signing being Sam Malcolm makes perfect sense, because he's basically the face of the franchise. It's like, it's him and Rumble now that Shep's gone for sure anyway. So I mean, hopefully we hear a few more re-signings soon, but you know, it makes perfect sense to have lock up the first you know, the first player locked up is Sam Malcolm. Yeah. Especially since he single-handedly got the Arrows the only win last year. So
that is very correct. Let's hope we don't have to rely on him to pull off another perfect game in order to get another win. Tim Matthews also said, "We're very excited to be welcoming Sam back for a sixth year with the club. Having been with us since day one, Sam is a foundational part of our organization. He's driven, carries a quiet confidence that his teammates respect, and is the type of player that leads by example day in and day out." Yep, perfectly.
It's like a captain.
Yeah, it's almost like he's a captain, even though he's not Canadian. In fact, he may even be the only Canadian not to captain the Arrows.
The only non-Canadian to not captain.
Exactly. Yeah, I said the right words, just not necessarily
in the correct order. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man. I mean, it's an exciting re-signing. It's always comforting to get the confirmation that that Malcolm's back, because you know, he's the best fly half for fullback. He's the best whatever position he wants to be in the league. So
I think as well with was it Rob Povey being traded? I think that if it's also announced that Ross Brody re-signs, or to be honest, any Canadian scrum half, having a Povey and Canadian scrum half pairing, that can then become the foundational pairing for the Canadian men's national team. And then you've just given the opportunity of having your starting like half pairing basically playing ideally an extra 16 games per year, just so they can like get gelled and understand their roles in the games and stuff. And you know, so that's kind of like what I'm encouraging. And you know, Sam Malcolm, he's great at fly half, but at fullback, I'm sure he's...
Yeah, I think...
You know, I think that'll probably be his position as well. Also, just a little bit off topic, is that the Arrows website has now reverted their logo to their, like, new A with wings.
Yeah.
And it with, like, the black A and the wings, it looks so clean. It looks so good.
Yeah, that was the one thing, like, I think with the Arrows logo and stuff, it's like, after we recorded last week, they kept releasing like different versions of it in like different colorways as well, right? So we got like a black A with the three colored wings, there's an all white version, there's an all black version. I think it's the same thing with all of the new like letters, or like the word mark that says fully spells out Arrows. There's also on the Instagram post, there's a version of the badge too that's just the maple leaf and the airplane. Right? And it's like, honestly, like I said, I liked it initially, and like the more I see it, the more I'm into it. The more like every I feel like, or like I've seen like a handful of people, like if you're trying to like maybe even like make fun of it or like critique it and being like it, I saw a couple things being like, oh, it looks like an airplane company or something, like an airline company, and I'm like, the team's named after an airplane, so it's,
makes sense.
Like kind of makes sense. It's like saying the Sabercats logo looks too much like a Sabercat.
Looks too much like an animal.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
The Sharks logo looks too much like a shark. But
far too aquatic for my taste.
Yeah, exactly. But also like I saw like there keeps being like the it looks like the G.I. Joe logo. And I mean, I'm a nerd, so if you tell me it looks like the G.I. Joe logo, that just makes me love it more. So I mean, I've have no issues with this. I'm genuinely loving the redesign and everything. It's really growing on me quite a bit. So your previous point though, I think you go Brody Povey at 10, Malcolm at fullback. Because I think even when the Arrows were at their best last year, it was with O'Leary at 10 and Malcolm at fullback. Obviously, yeah. O'Leary has gone to the Sharks, right? So Povey, I think Povey would be a good replacement. But I guess Povey can play fullback too, right? So you can maybe mess with that combination a little bit too.
That is an option. So we mentioned Sam's connection to Bill Webb. And actually, another MLR team has already announced their tribute to Bill.
This
is really cool. Nola Gold put on social media that they will honor Bill Webb by placing the Webb name above their MLR logo for the 2024 season. I think that's really cool. And
yeah,
so Nola Gold posted on their social media account, embracing Bill Webb's indelible influence, the Nola Gold organization dedicates this ARP season to his memory. The Gold Miners carry forward his powerful legacy, ensuring his contributions to the MLR are never forgotten. RIP Bill Webb, 1963 to 2023.
Yeah, it's an incredibly classy move from the Nola Gold. I would imagine the Toronto Arrows, when we see what their kit looks like, will have something. I don't necessarily want to say something similar in design, but I'm assuming they're going to have something to honor Bill Webb on the Arrows kit this year as well. It does also, you know, seeing the impact that Bill had on like the other MLR teams, it also makes me wonder if the league will do something to honor him as well, considering like, you know, Nola obviously made a big enough impact that the Nola Gold want to put his name on their jersey. Right. And, you know, obviously after, you know, Marcus Callaway passed away, you know, the league named an award after him, giving, you know, and that's handed out for like, you know, recognition of, you know, players work in the community service, growing rugby at the grassroots level. And, you know, it's become a very prestigious award within the league as well. And I mean, I wonder if there's some sort of way to honor Bill Webb like that as well. Like, you know, maybe you don't even necessarily have to create a new award or anything, but like, you know, maybe we start naming awards after people that had a big impact on the league. You know, you can have like the Bill Webb Player of the Year Award, or Forward of the Year, Back of the Year, Coach of the Year, etc. Bill Webb Shield. Although I kind of like the shield just being the shield, but like there's, you know, I think there's ways to honor him at like the league level and stuff too. I think it's super cool that Nola is doing this on their jersey. And I'm assuming the Arrows will also, it's an assumption. I don't act, but I'm assuming the Arrows are also going to do something on their kit too. And, you know, it's become very, very clear over like the past few weeks. It's like how big Bill Webb's impact on the game of rugby in North America has been.
Yeah, so to clarify, this naming inclusion is for the America's Rugby Premiership.
It's still cool.
And I'm not saying it's not cool, is that it's just that these are, so like, don't expect, so at this moment in time, don't expect this to appear on the 2024 kit for the Nola Gold. As we've said, there's
It's still
almost certainly going to be one, but yeah, it is a very
still really classic,
respectable.
Movie,
yeah,
they don't have respectable to, they them. Don't yeah, have to do that at all. But it's still, yeah. It's awesome to see Nola choosing to honor Bill Webb in that way. Still,
yeah, very much appreciated. And in other MLR news, down in Miami, the Sharks have announced that they will be playing their 2024 season at the Ordination Sports Field in Fort Lauderdale. And some of you may be like, Fort Lauderdale, that's not in Miami. To which they say, hey, don't worry about it. Now,
to a handful of the other Miami sport teams, too.
That is fair enough. Now, Ordination Sports Field, you may not be familiar with, but you probably are familiar if you're a fan of MLS is Inter Miami, and their stadium is the Drive Pink Stadium. Well, the Ordination Sports Field is part of their training facilities next to the Drive Pink Stadium. Sports Field itself will have added seating, including bleachers, to increase the capacity to a respectable 5,000 people in time for the 2024 MLR season. And there's been a lot of trading news going on. If you want to keep up to date with all the trade details, we recommend following MLR Stats, where our good friend James Dealey keeps up to date on a weekly report on all the trades that have been happening in MLR, including any players that have announced retirement or moving to different leagues altogether. And the big one that has happened that James has just missed, because it came out literally a couple of hours before he posted his, is that AJ Alatimu of Seattle, formerly of Seattle, has now been traded to Houston in return for Joe Toffoli. And
that's a huge trade.
that is a huge trade.
Because it's probably the biggest MLR trade so far. Like, this is superstar fly half being traded for an Eagles hooker. Like, it's, I don't know, it might be the biggest, best trade that's been made in MLR so far. And it feels like it's for rugby reasons too.
Yeah, and it's the thing is that it's just a player trade. It's not, trade plus salary cap plus a draft position. So, you know, it's both players of equal caliber in, you know, definitely in different positions. But I think as well, it's just the fact that, like, AJ Alatimu has been so instrumental to Seattle. But their acquisition of Mac Mason was actually mentioned in the trade. Of why this is happening. And, you know, obviously we don't know, like, players' internal decision-making. You know, AJ has been with Seattle, maybe wanted something new. Maybe Joe wanted to move up to the Pacific Northwest and give them basically an example of his capabilities after they've seen him perform so well. So, yeah, it's, you know, definitely, I think it's what the biggest trade probably since Ben Lesage's trade to LA.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, like, you know, obviously Davey Kotze was one of the league's best fly halves last year. But Houston has also traded away Robbie Povey. So there's a gap at fly half. Houston also drafted Max Schumacher second overall. He's a fly half, too. You know, picking up Povey's obviously gone, but they drafted Schumacher and then have now traded for Alatimu. So that obviously might lead to, you know, what's happening with Davey Kotze as well. Right. So, it feels like a trade that it's like, yeah, Houston's moved out some fly halves or has moved on from some fly halves. So now they're bringing in one. Right. And, they have a really good forward group. They have a really good forward group, so maybe they kind of feel that they can, they can move on from Toffoli. And obviously, if you're going to bring in Alatimu, you're going to need a pretty big name going back the other way. So,
yeah,
it's a great trade. Like, this is, we need more MLR GMs. We need this. It's the off season. Have fun.
Silly season.
Yeah, play fantasy rugby, but in real life. I'm sure the Players Association might not like me hearing that. These are actual people that lives are being affected, but I like these trades, man. This is, it's a good off season. it's fun off-season stuff, man. It keeps keeps all the teams in the news, keeps everybody engaged, keeps everything exciting. And then obviously when it's two big players like this, then it's a, you know, it's a pretty great talking point for everybody.
Exactly. About. Okay, we're going to move away from MLR, but still keep it in North America, because whilst this World Cup has been going on in France, there's also been action happening in the continental United States at a more reasonable hour. Reasonable is depending on if you're in the mountains or not, because the USA took on Toulouse, or otherwise known as TAD Toulouse, in Utah this weekend. A very close encounter. It did look as though Toulouse were going to walk away with it, and having seen Canada play Leinster in Hamilton, I know that, you know, you can't make anything with these professional club teams coming around and playing essentially tier two nations. It was just a fun game. It's, you know, part of the partnership of the between the Utah Warriors and Toulouse.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were some names in the squad. An Untamak was in the side, not Roman. He's obviously on the sidelines whilst everything's going on. In fact, a lot of the big names are currently playing for France in France in this World Cup. But while there is this break in the top 14 for the pool stages, it is, you know, great to give these teams, especially, you know, the guys that maybe aren't the big name starters, coming in and, you know, showing what they're capable of. And so as a result, we had a very close encounter, an absolute, you know, looked like it was going to be a blowaway win for Toulouse right at the start, especially when it got to like halftime. And then the USA came back into it, an intercept try being, the main difference maker for the Eagles. And, you know, right at the death, Toulouse were really pushing for that try line, but USA held on, forced a penalty, and as such won the game. And yeah, a big win, USA 24, Toulouse 21. You know, it's kind of thinking like, if this top 14 team is coming all the way out here, and there's an entire province that has French as its designated language, maybe there could have been a game going on there. Maybe. Perhaps.
Oh, we're circling back to Louis Mayeux's interview, I guess.
Yeah,
his big talking point. I think, like, I mean, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to actually watch this game. But I love the idea that Toulouse came over. It looked like there was a pretty big crowd. There was, I guess, they set the record for the world's largest scrum, which is, I saw that video. That's fun. So good for Utah for putting that on. And, you know, it's cool to see MLR teams building these partnerships with, you know, some pretty big clubs overseas. And obviously, you know, maybe taking advantage of the fact that the World Cup is in France. Not really sure, to be honest, how that's affecting top 14 teams or Pro D2 teams, considering I'm imagining most of those stadiums are all being used up for the World Cup right now. Mm-hmm. But it's cool to see a team come over. Just like it was cool to see Leinster come over. You know, I would honestly love to see a little bit more of this type of game, right? Like just bringing club sides and stuff over that, you know, most people that would never get to see, right? And it's like you get like it was cool. Like you mentioned the Leinster Canada game. I just thought that was cool because it was fun to watch Leinster, which is a team like I've never seen live. I've never been to Ireland, so I've never, obviously, never really gotten the chance to see them, right? So it's cool to see, you know, some of those types of clubs come over here. Hopefully the crowd in Utah had a good time, and hopefully if Utah is going to be continuing a partnership with Toulouse, this can become a regular thing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it'd be interesting. I don't know what the top 14 season is going to be like, because it's obviously been, it started early, but it's now been paused for the pool stage of the World Cup, so it's finishing later. So, but yeah, maybe, you know, preseason warm up of having like, and maybe even Utah or the Eagles go and play them in Toulouse. You know, we shall see.
Well, I think part of that too is also obviously USA is not in the World Cup, So they're probably also looking for games and stuff too. So a bit of a weird, maybe it's a weird one-off thing, but I'd like to see more of it.
All right. And now back to Canada. So in Halifax, Wanderers Ground are proposing to renovate and to become a permanent multi-use sports stadium in time for the 2026 FIFA World Cup that will take place in North America. So currently there is a 6,000 person temporary structure in place, and this new plan will see permanent stadium with the removing of the bleachers and the installation of permanent stands in what is in the north and east side. It will also increase the capacity to 8,500, and there will be the installation of a FIFA artificial surface. This is probably similar to the surface at York Lions Stadium, and it can be sized for soccer, rugby, and Canadian football. There is also the possibility of a winter bubble being installed at the stadium, as well as an option to develop the south side into permanent stands as well. The estimated cost at the moment for all this renovation is $40 million. It's also being done in conjunction with a financial commitment from the Halifax Wanderers Football Club. They're going to be the anchor tenant of the Wanderers Ground through fair agreement that will contribute to the cost of construction over a 30-year lease period. There's also going to be commercial management and a focus on event attractions, so turning it into a concert venue outside of the CPL season or any other team that comes to play at the Wanderers Ground. The current timeline is that if the plan is approved by the HRM Council in January of 2024, stadium construction can be confirmed with the materials ordered in April, the removal of the temporary structure next November, with groundwork beginning, and they've put on this plan on November 5th, and the stadium materials are being delivered and construction beginning in March 2025, with a new stadium opening on May the 3rd, 2025, and then the World Cup beginning in Canada, the USA, and Mexico in the summer of 2026. Now, that's just the timeline for the moment. As we all know, timelines are flexible, shall we say, when it comes to these infrastructure projects. But if you have the opportunity to look at any of the renderings, and I found out about this through the Atlantic Select's Twitter page, and the whole project is being supported by the Downtown Business Commission of Halifax. A lot of organizations, including the YMCA and area business associations, a lot of amateur teams as well, including like the Halifax City Soccer Club, the HCUTT, Suburban FC. There's also Rugby Nova Scotia, Rugby Canada, and the Atlantic Selects, along with the Canadian Sports Institute, is all supporting this renovation. And if you look at any of the renders, it does look like it's going to be an absolutely stunning redevelopment. And should be worth mentioning that the owner of Halifax Wanderers Football Club has previously expressed interest in having a MLR team in Halifax. So maybe, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying that if you have a FIFA certified, which is also similar as World Rugby certified, definitely helps.
I think, I can't read your mind, but I'm assuming you did kind of bring this up because obviously Rugby Canada has played games at the Wanderers Ground, right? Mm-hmm. So it has been used for test matches. Most recently, I believe the women played there earlier this year, earlier this year or late last year, either way.
Last year.
Yeah, late last year, yeah. So, obviously, it's a Rugby Canada venue that's getting a bit of an upgrade. You mentioned the Atlantic Selects kind of showing their support in it. I'm hoping, as we continue to hope, that the Coast to Coast Cup continues to grow. It'd be great to see, teams like, Arrows Academy, Atlantic Selects, Rugby Quebec, BC Bears, any of those other kind of elite amateur sides across the country, getting access to, elite world-class facilities. So I think that's also a good thing. Little side interest of I wonder if an MLR team would work there, right? you know, we obviously have kind of mentioned on previous episodes that it's like, you know, it's one thing to say that there's stuff there, but it's another thing to actually do it and put in the work to actually getting a team. But, you know, it is an interesting venue and stuff, especially if Rugby Canada is going to be playing test matches, things there. And just because I do want to segue to the next thing that you want to talk about on this script, could be a little, I mean, looking across Canada, as we mentioned last week, the Canadian Premier League, it could be a nice little side benefit if Canadian Premier League teams keep building stadiums.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Right. It's like, it might be a nice little side benefit for rugby in Canada. Cause obviously like the Arrows already, they play in a, I mean, obviously they play at York, a stadium that's like owned and operated by York University, but a Canadian Premier League team, the York United, does also play at that building. Right. So we got the Arrows already sharing a stadium with York United. Right. And it's like, I'm not really sure where all the Premier League teams play, but like, you know, there's, it seems, I think like even Langford, I think, has a soccer team that plays out of there. I'm not sure if that's a Premier League team or not though. You know, it could be a nice little benefit if the Canadian Premier League is going to get money and teams are going to want to be upgrading some stadiums and stuff. It could be, could have a nice little side benefit on rugby.
Speaking yeah, absolutely.
Canadian Premier League though. Stu, you want to bring up some stuff.
Yeah, I just want to confirm that I believe it is, I'm just trying to find the team, but Pacific FC play at Starlight Stadium in...
Is that a Canadian Premier League team?
That is a Canadian Premier League team, but there's also Vancouver FC who play at Willoughby Community Park at the moment.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay, now I'm actually looking at it. Yeah, so Pacific FC is on Vancouver Island, and then Vancouver FC is in the Lower Mainland.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's cool. So
anyway, back to segueing into continuing to talk about the Canadian Premier League. So I found out that the Canadian Premier League has an interesting playoff condition. So obviously you have to win enough games to qualify for the playoffs. That's fine. However, the CPL states that teams must also have 2,000 minutes played by under 21 Canadian domestic players to qualify for the playoffs. Now, teams play 28 games in the regular season, so this equates to a full starting 11 of under U21 Canadian domestic players playing two full games in a season. Obviously, it can be worked out throughout the season, but you have to do that in order to be able to complete in the playoffs. And so I was thinking, can a similar idea be applied to MLR? Because, you know, we have the draft system and we're getting guys out of university. But I'm going to mix it up a bit because I think getting U21 Canadian rugby players, you know, maybe that doesn't exactly work. So I've just mixed it around a bit. So for the CPL, it's two full games of a full team for over their 28 games in the season, but MLR only has 16. So I'm saying one full starting 15 playing a full 80 minutes. So that is 15 players times 80 minutes. So that's 1,200 minutes, 1,200 minutes. And for these players to be eligible, they must, for this 1,200 minute allocation, the players must be USA or Canadian eligible and also uncapped at senior level as of January 1st of that season. So, for example, if you had a player playing for like the New England Free Jacks, for example, who hadn't been capped by the USA or Canada in 2023, they would be... they would be part of this designation that could reach those 1,200 minutes. However, if they received a cap in, you know, the mid-year test or the end-of-year tour, then they would be ineligible for the next season. And then you have, like, the state of jeopardy that puts teams into. So it's like, do teams get their minutes in early at the start of the season when things are a bit, you know, loosey-goosey, and you obviously can't tell who's going to make the playoff in, like, the first couple of weeks? Or do they aim to qualify first under the risk that they may not have the time available to get all those players in? But, Derek, give me your thoughts, because I'm just, like, free-balling at this point.
Yeah, so I don't really follow any form of soccer. So you putting this in the script is the first time hearing of the Canadian Premier League's rule. It certainly is an interesting rule. But I don't think it would work in Major League Rugby. And there's a couple of reasons for that. For your point on, like, the strategy of, like, what coaches would do, again, I don't really watch the Canadian Premier League, but it looks like the teams that are going to make the playoffs are kind of, like, coasting, and because the Canadian Premier League actually does have a page that tracks everybody's minutes, and it looks like the teams that are going to make the playoffs are kind of coasting and might just barely hit the 2,000 minutes, depending on how they use the lineup in the last three games, I guess. Whereas all the teams that are completely out of the playoffs, like the five win teams, like Vancouver FC and Valor FC, are like have blown away the 2,000 point or the 2,000 minute mark. Vancouver FC, who is in dead last in the league, has 4,616 minutes played as of right now. So it does kind of seem like, as far as the strategy goes, the strategy looks like if you stink, you play all the young guys. And if you don't stink, you try to make it last. I'm saying that I don't know if anything about this league, really. I don't know if Vancouver or Valor are just, like, in a rebuild or something, or why they're at the bottom of the standings. But I think, like, the main reason, though, that I think this wouldn't work is the Canadian Premier League, like, if you look around, like, their website, they have a big focus on, like, development. Like, even the league's, like, import rule states that the import, like, 50% of imported players have to be under 23, right? And if you use all of your import slots, the last guy, like, your seventh import player, according to their website, has to be under 21. Right. So if you use seven import slots, you can have three guys that I guess are whatever age. Three guys have to be under 23, and then one guy has to be under 21. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I'll be honest. That's why I didn't do a simple one for one.
Yeah. I agree with you. If you wanted to transfer this idea to MLR, you would need to mess around with the ages and the numbers. I agree with that. I just don't think it would work in general, though, it's not that I don't think it would work, because I think you could, if you wanted to do it, you probably could do it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think I would want to see it, though, in MLR. I guess, I wouldn't want to see it, I guess, is a more appropriate way to do it, or to word this. So, because it's like, to me, if you look around the Canadian Premier League website, they use the word, like, development a lot, right? Yeah. And, like, kind of state that, like, part of the goal of the league is to, like, graduate guys to MLS, right? Like, which is obviously the highest level you can play in North America. And I think that's why I don't think I would want to see this rule, right? Is because Major League Rugby is the highest level that you can play in North America, right? Yeah. So I wouldn't want to see a rule that dictates, like, that, hey, like, an under 23 player has to play this many minutes, because it's supposed to be the highest level, right? And it's not a development league. Like, MLR, obviously, like, it's part of the side effect of MLR is obviously that you hope the USA Eagles and the Canadian national team get better, but it's not a development league. It's the highest level that you can play.
Right.
So I'm like, I don't think that this, I would want to necessarily see this. However, if, to circle back to, like, what we were kind of talking about last week, in, you know, based on Curry Hitchborn's quote saying, like, there needs to be something else, right? Like, if there should, I think, like, if you were to have a level that's between university/collegiate rugby, right, and the MLR, then having, like, say, like, say like a full-fledged proper academy league, for example, right?
Yeah.
Right. Say you had something like that or something, or like expand the Coast to Coast Cup to something bigger. If you wanted to make this rule for that, I would be more interested in it, to be like, oh yeah, let's get a bunch of like 19-year-olds and then make them play. I think that works, but I think that this kind of rule, I feel like, works in a development league, whereas the MLR to me is not a development league, and it's the best league. That's the highest level you can play in North America. And I don't think a rule like this would work and function well in a league. That's the highest level that you can go to.
No, I can understand that. I think so. My counter to that is, and this has been something that has like affected the league since basically its inception, sure, is that there's an over-reliance on foreign players in the league. And, you know, again, going back to saying that, you know, it's the announced reason of why Colorado departed MLR.
It's fair.
And at the same time is that if you have, you know, grown up with rugby, you've played rugby at university, and you're in a specialized position, say fly half, for example, and then you know that from university, the next stage that is available to you outside of club is MLR.
Mm-hmm.
And even going into academies and stuff like that. And the you join and you're like, oh yeah, I'm mainly a fly half. I played fly half all my time at my uni career, but I can also do like fullback if needs be. And these are the positions that require skills and stuff. And they're usually the positions that get picked up by foreign players. And I'll agree with you. The MLR is not a development league. It is
no
the Apex, and it is not a league that is run or owned by the like USA Rugby or Rugby Canada. It is a for-profit league, and as such, the most important thing for each team is to win. And for you to win, you need to have the best players at your disposal in certain positions. So yeah, I will agree that, you know, and again, I'm not the one who's, you know, becoming CEO of MLR and saying this is absolutely what's going to happen. But I do agree in like the sentiment of there needs to be more development of Canadian and USA players. And without the existence of a development league that fills the gap between collegiate rugby and MLR, this would be something that would, you know, for the time, ensure that, you know, uncapped players are getting like more time in the sport, getting used to a professional environment, which would ultimately benefit the national team. So that's why I came up with this.
See, okay, so here's, I guess, the other argument, though, for this. There's a lot of uncapped players in the league anyways, right? Mm-hmm. Like, on both teams. I would even probably guess, like, that most teams probably hit that mark anyways, right? Just, like, where their teams kind of are. A lot of teams are probably close to, or if not over. What did you suggest, 1,200 minutes?
1,200 minutes.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of players that are uncapped or that haven't been capped yet that are probably like teams are I don't necessarily know, because I would have to actually go and dive through every team's like minutes and stuff, but I think like part of that though in saying like, oh, like we need to develop more like North American fly halves, right, which I think is definitely true, as we kind of talked about in, you know, at the end of the season last year, there's a lot of foreign-born fly halves in the league, right? But nothing about, like, the CPL rule dictates where you have to play those guys, right? Like, you could have that rule. You could have that rule, and it wouldn't change if any number of fly halves in the league, right? You could just be like, all right, we're going to shove a bunch of Canadians on the wing or whatever, right? Like, it's it kind of like nothing about it actually dictates it. And even like looking at the way, because again, the CPL actually has the webpage where they track all the minutes. You have like some teams that are just like, you know, some teams that look like they have a lot of guys that are fitting into this category. You have a team like Ottawa where all their minutes that so they've reached their 2000 minute mark. Basically, all the minutes are split between two guys. Right. Like that's it. Like it's just It's two players that I obviously play all the time. Right. And they don't have it. Whereas other teams are maybe, you know, there's a couple of guys that have just a few minutes or a couple of guys that look like they played one game or something that are contributing to it. But like Ottawa is just basically two guys that they've used to hit the mark. Right. And it's so it's like I don't necessarily think that, again, it works in a development league, or maybe it might work in a development league, but it also might work in a development league where something like soccer, where it has significantly more players available too. Like the player pool that the Canadian Premier League gets to draw from is probably a lot bigger than
I mean, say
a domestic rugby, Canadian rugby league would get to draw from.
Well, that's the right? Soccer or football is the most popular sport in the world.
Exactly.
So of course, it's going to right.
It's so it's things. Huge. So it's like, obviously like it's different. And I think like there's that. There's also the other thing too, where to be honest with you, I really don't like any, and I have no idea how like CPL fans or CPL coaches or players feel about this rule. But like I don't really like any rule that kind of dictates to a coach what they have to do with the lineup. And if your automatic counter to that is an import rule, is the import rule kind of slightly dictates what they have to do. The import rule is just a max, right? So it's like you could, like, that was the one thing you brought up, the Raptors departure. They're being like, oh, like, there's too many, like, foreign-born players in the league. And it's like, well, like, nobody said you had to sign them. Like, you can roll out an all-domestic 23, right? The Arrows rolled out an all-Canadian starting 15 this year, right? There's nothing yeah. to, you don't have to play foreign, you don't have to use those foreign player slots. And furthermore, right, if you want more foreign player slots, there's options to you. Like you can just trade for more slots, right? So you get and still build your roster how you want within that slight limitation. But beyond that, like, you know, we're seeing South Africa using the bench really creatively, right? You know, a 7-1 split in some of the World Cup warm-up games, four scrum halves on the bench last week.
I think you'll find Kevin Rouet utilized that in for Canada.
Speaking of Kevin Rouet, like one of the creative things that he does, because it's available to him, is the number 8 kicks.
Yeah.
Right? The number 8 kicks goals. It's a creative thing that he uses because it's available to him, right? And I like that. I like that rugby is a game where it's like, you know, there is a lot of different philosophical approaches and strategies that you can take and to how you construct your lineup. You can be like South Africa and be like, you're playing Ireland on the weekend, right? And you're going to, because we've already seen the South African lineup. And it's like, yeah, let's rock a 7-1 split on the bench, right? Against the number one ranked team in the world, we're going to just roll out the bomb squad. And against the number one team in the world and see how it works. So personally, I kind of like stuff like that. But I mean, really, it's just, I think this is great for something like the Canadian Premier League. And I think in my limited knowledge of soccer, it seems like Canada soccer is benefiting from this. Right. But I don't think that this would work in the MLR. But in saying that, there's also a lot of uncapped guys that would maybe be under 24 that are still playing in MLR. So, like, I haven't looked at the numbers. Maybe there's, like, subconsciously this is already happening anyways. And if it's already happening anyways, it doesn't need to be a rule, right? So, for kind of both, all those reasons, I don't think this would necessarily – I just don't think that this would work in MLR. You might have to modify it a lot, to me anyways.
Well, this is already a modified version of what the CPL does, but if our listeners or viewers think that this is something that the MLR should implement or something similar to get an increase of domestic. Maybe it's just even a reduction of the foreign player slots. Let us know. And you can let us know either in the comments on social media or can you leave comments on Spotify? It's been a while. I don't know if you...
You can, actually. There's like poll questions. Oh, yeah, you can comment on poll questions and stuff, yeah.
All right, maybe we should set up a poll question of...
You can comment. You can make a... Yeah, like there's a generic question too. It's like, what did you think of the episode? That's like automatically on every like Spotify episode too. And then I can like add other questions to the discussion and stuff. Interesting. So maybe I should, we could perhaps utilize that tool a little bit more, a little bit more effectively.
As we all know, the World Cup will be coming around with its third weekend of the pool stages. Now, we already gave our predictions for Italy versus Uruguay, which is, you know, which is
amazing
because hasn't happened while we recorded, but will have happened by the time the
episode. So we still have no idea what the result of this game is, but at least
absolutely not. But you know who won? Rugby won. So
Uruguay won. That's my prediction, anyways.
Well, we'll find out when this episode comes out. Okay, so we are going to blitz through these predictions. First up, we have France versus Namibia.
France.
Pool A. France, yeah, I think that is a nailed on
result for both of us. That's an easy one.
And we would also like to wish Leroux Malan the swiftest of recoveries, and we hope to see him back in MLR as soon as possible. Next up, we have Argentina versus Samoa. I am going with Argentina.
Yeah, I was stoked to see Theo McFarlane get man of the match, you know, showing the Saracens some love there last week against Chile. But yeah, I feel like Argentina is going to, I feel like I'll take this one.
Okay, next up, we have a European clash of Georgia versus Portugal. I feel like this is going to be the first of some close games this weekend.
Yeah,
who do you have?
I think this will be a great match. I think Georgia really needs to win this one, though. I think they need to both prove that they can hang with tier one teams and also, you know, kind of help their like positioning on the ladder in their pool.
Yeah, that's the thing. I full respect to Portugal. They put in a great performance against Wales, but you know, Georgia have been top of the Rugby Europe Championship for the better part of nearly two decades, I'd say now. So it's got to go with Georgia for me as well. For sure. Next up, we have England versus Chile. And yeah, Chile already have two losses under the belt, so it's not looking good for them. And up against a former winner, yeah, I'm going with England.
Yeah, I mean, the heart says Chile. Like, everyone's second favorite team right now. But yeah, it's going to... The pick's England. The heart says Chile, though.
Okay, but now we have the big clash of the weekend. It is South Africa versus Ireland. The defending champions versus the world number ones. And I'm going to go with Ireland.
Nice. I'm going to take South Africa, man. They're going to roll out the fresh pack in the second half.
It's devastating, man. Well, that's the thing is though, if South Africa picks up two injuries in the backs, they are in a world of trouble. When it happens, we will find it. You know, that's the thing. You do a 7-1 bench and it works well the first time, but as soon as those injuries come up, anyway. So now we move on to put the second game of Pool B, and that is Scotland versus Tonga. Who have you got?
You know, I think I'm going to take Scotland. We got to, they got more Canadians on Scotland. So, we got to go with them, right? Podcast rule, the team with more Canadians on it.
That is true. I will also go with Scotland. You know, I think Scotland is in a really tough pool, obviously against South Africa and Ireland, but I think that their game against Tonga, that'll be one of their wins of the pool stages that at least ensures that they qualify automatically for the next World Cup. And we close out the weekend with another big clash. It is Wales versus Australia. This was tipped to be the deciding game of the tournament of who would finish first or second in Pool C. at this point, it may be if Australia get out of Pool C. I am going, as always, with Wales.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Australia. One, because I think I just decided I'm never going to pick Wales because I'm on a podcast with you. But two, because I'm cheering for chaos. And this pool would be insane if Australia beats Wales. So I'm cheering for the maximum chaos right now.
I want Wales to win, but I've been in this song and dance too many times to really utilize it. And there will be another Wednesday game, so we are going to make our predictions.
Uruguay only plays on Wednesdays? Like, what is this?
Yeah, it's almost like France being a bunch of idiots and only allocating them to play on Wednesday. I know, it's completely unfair. I'm actually going ahead now to see when they're, like, fourth or fifth game. Yeah, they play Wednesday, Thursday, and...
At least they get the full week between their games.
Yeah, I suppose that there is some parity to all this and not some method to the madness. But yeah, it seems as though they are, you know, like a midweek fixture, but everyone's behind them, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Uruguay's second game that we have in this pool will be against Namibia. And I think this will be a great clash, but I'm going to go with Uruguay because they have Canadians on their team as well, of course, because
honorary Canadians
and Manu Diana are honorary Canadians. So
It's crazy how, once again, how far out we are picking this game. So we don't even get to see the previous two games.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I feel like Namibia has been in too many World Cups to not have a W at the World Cup. And this seems like the best chance to do it in their pool. So I'm going to back Namibia just because I want to see them get a win. Just one win.
That's fine.
Uruguay is really good, though. But just one win. Plus, Namibia's got a lot of MLR players. So that's...
That is true as well.
Enough. If you play for the Free Jacks, you're basically Canadian too, right? So, I mean...
Yeah, Nova Anglia, obviously. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, so those are our predictions for the Rugby World Cup, and you can watch those games on TSN, tsn.ca, and TSN+. Make sure you check the local listings to see which channel they are on. And a game that we will be talking about next week for certain is that Canada will be playing the Red Roses this Saturday in Exeter. It is going to be available to our knowledge because nothing's officially come out, and we will correct this if it has changed. This game will be available on YouTube on the England Rugby channel. So you can find that link and you can follow it there. And of course, keep up to date with us on social media. We are available on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at The Rouge Rugby, if that information should change. But if you like this episode and you want to check out any more, including our written pieces, you can find that on our website, therougerugby.ca, and you can find the podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We also have our YouTube channel, again, at The Rouge Rugby, with episodes of the podcast, as well as extra interviews with players and coaches in the black box. Make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all of our videos. Derek, where can the fine people find you?
At BrissetTheJet across all social media platforms.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spelled H4RDMAN, where you can give me some ideas on how to improve the Canadian and USA player involvement in MLR. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Derek, thank you for joining me, and thank you all for joining us for another episode of La Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.